It's a Wednesday morning. It's the 9th of August. You're very welcome to the show. If you want to make contact with us, you can do so by texting 086 60 25000. That number good for WhatsApp messages as well. You can also call us on 074 91 25000. Caroline and Niamh are taking your calls this morning. You can use social media. We're at Highland Radio on Twitter or X. We're Highland Hub on Facebook. We're also all over Instagram and Snapchat and other social media as well. You can email us comments at highlandradio.com. You can write to us. It's The 9 till noon show, Highland Radio, Mountain Top Letter, Kenny. And you can communicate with us in any way you choose, because as we always say, whereas we do have a busy show lined up in terms of guests, the bedrock of this programme, what makes this programme the special programme it is your opinions, it's your perspectives, it's your take on the stories of the day, or indeed the issues you believe we should be raising. We will start, as always, with a look at the papers. A number of the local papers out today, starting with the Donegal Post. Ard Lohanlon spotted in Finner Camp. He's making a TV programme and has been doing some filming in the South Donegal area. And some pictures, obviously, inside as well from the Ballyshannon Folk Festival. Another success in Ballyshannon took place last weekend. Now, the main story written by Siobhan McNamara, sharp increase in COVID-19. COVID-19 is circulating in our communities, leading to increased pressure on a health system that's already stretched beyond capacity. As of 8 a.m. on yesterday, Tuesday morning, there were 16 patients in Letterkenny University Hospital with COVID-19 and 23 in Sligo. Nationally, the figure was 378. And indeed, in the week leading up to the bank holiday weekend, the HSE locally had indeed been warning of busy hospitals and pressure on the hospital system. And an increase in COVID figures was one of the reasons given for that particular concern. Front of the Inish Times this morning, Buncrana to remember OMA bombing victims. Buncrana will next week mark the 25th anniversary of the OMA bombing. It killed four children and a young woman who had left Inishowen on the morning of the atrocity. It took the lives of three children from the town, 8-year-old Oran Doherty and 12-year-olds Sean McLaughlin and James Barker. They were a part of a group of local children accompanying a Spanish exchange group on a day out. Blasco Baselga and Rocia Abad Amos, 12 and 23 respectively, both from Madrid, also died in the blast. The Finn Valley Voice this morning GoFundMe campaign for St. Johnson cancer patient. Slee Midlin writes that nearly €2,000 has been raised for a St. Johnson man who is undergoing cancer treatment. Martin Gamble underwent the surgery in the Blackrock Clinic in Dublin on Wednesday last. It removed a portion of his lung and a tumour. His nephew says they're praying and hoping he'll get home soon, and as soon as he is able to do so. And as always, the local community getting behind one of their own. And that is the main story there on the front of the Finn Valley Voice. Looking at the Irish Independent this morning as we move to the nationals, and there's one photograph that's appearing on all the national papers this morning. That's the funeral cortege of Sinead O'Connor as it passes through the streets of Bray ahead of her funeral. Thousands lined the streets yesterday to say their final farewells. The Irish Independent's main story on the front page, increase in child benefit rate now on table in budget talks. The Independent really going for it all this week, I think it seems, with the budget. Exclusive, they say, an increase in the 140 monthly child benefit payment affecting 650,000 families has been put forward in coalition talks on budget 2024. The possibility of increasing the core rate paid in respect of 1.2 million children has been discussed as an option by ministers in preliminary talks ahead of the budget, which is due to be unveiled in October. And Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has pledged to address levels of child poverty in the state. Front of the Irish Times this morning again, a picture of Sinead O'Connor passing through the streets of Bray. This is a picture taken on the seafront as thousands said a final goodbye. The private family funeral was attended by the President and the Taoiseach, and Sinead's brother Joseph O'Connor read his poem Blackbird in Dunleary at the service, and that poem is reproduced on the front of the Irish Times this morning as well. front of the main story then underneath the Sinéad O'Connor coverage is Portugal battles wildfires as global heat reaches record levels. July confirmed as hottest month on record as flames spread toward the Algarve. Iberian Peninsula braced for third summer heatwave with temperatures in the mid-40s. So if you are heading to Portugal, just bear that in mind in the coming weeks. Another heatwave on the way there to the Algarve. The Irish Daily Mail, farewell to a daughter of Ireland. Again, the Sinéad O'Connor funeral cortege. The main story on the front page, ex-teacher's death means we'll never see justice. Dozens of victims of an alleged serial abuser in Terenure College say they've been denied justice after he died at the weekend following a lengthy Garda investigation. The Irish Daily Mail can reveal that Dennis Whitty, 83, a former lay teacher, was due to face 9 sample charges next month in relation to one person who allegedly suffered at his hands. The victim told the Mail he wanted to go to court and look Whitty in the eye, but will now be unable to do so. He likened attending the school in Dublin to walking through the gates of hell. The front of the Irish Daily Star this morning. Again, the Sinéad O'Connor funeral cortege passing through Bray. Sinéad's final bow. Thousands of fans join stars to thank daughter of Ireland. And that's the front of the Irish Daily Star. Front of the Mirror this morning. Farewell, a beloved daughter of Ireland. Again, the main story. Bob Bono, Bob Geldof and President Higgins lead thousands of mourners at funeral. The thousands lined the streets to pay their final respects. And the Irish Sun, again, a unique daughter of Ireland. Fans, farewell to the voice of a generation. Also, exclusive Masons United talks. That's, I presume, on the back pages. We'll take a peek at the back page. Disaster. PFA chief backs Pep Varane and KDB. I presume that's Kevin De Bruyne. As added time controversy rocks game, the football bosses risk sleepwalking to disaster by forcing matches to run over 100 minutes. The PFA chief executive, Maheta Malango, and apologies for that pronunciation, it's more Malango, I think, backed Manchester United defender Rafael Varane, who branded the new rules dangerous, damaging and senseless. Manchester City star Kevin De Bruyne and boss Pep Guardiola also fumed at the time-wasting crackdown after the Community Shield. So they are your papers as they are this morning. As we say, if you have an issue you'd like to see raised on the programme, please make contact. 0749125000 is the phone number. You can text or WhatsApp 086 60 25000, or comment on our socials as well. Don't forget, by the way, we are broadcasting live across YouTube and across our Facebook channels and pages as well. Highland Radio Ireland on YouTube, and it's Highland Radio and Highland Radio News and Sport on Facebook. You can watch the programme as it unfolds. That means you get to see the Zoom calls as they happen, and you get to see my cheery visage as well, if that's what tickles your fancy. And, you know, the programme is as accessible as we can possibly make it, and we make it that accessible because we want you to access it. So please do get in touch. Please do raise the issues you want to raise. It's 12 and a half minutes past nine. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. And we're going to go now to Anna on line one. Anna, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald, to you too.
Anna, we were speaking...
You're doing a very good job in Greg's absence.
Thank you very much indeed. Anna, you have contacted us because you were in Greencastle on Sunday, wonderful part of the world, but the joy of your being there was somewhat tempered by the amount of litter that was around the place.
Yes. I generally would have a walk in Greencastle or in Moville. And I was shocked on that particular day that I went down to see the amount of litter that was strewn around a common ground part there in Greencastle where cars would park and that, and people would, you know, walk around that area. And I was just amazed at the amount of litter. There was takeaway boxes and there was just rubbish of all kinds lying around, scattered around everywhere. And I was amazed because there are bins in that area, just right beside where, you know, there was a takeaway box in particular, a few other things. There's bins in that very particular area, at least two. There's certainly one, and there may be two. But, I mean, I don't know what kind of people, you know, that they just can't take their litter, put it into a bin, because there are bins in Greencastle. I mean, and I have seen local people out with their pickers, mm-hmm. picking up rubbish from time to time, and they really shouldn't have to do that. And I think that people who have, well, all people, locals and visitors alike, should respect the area that they're in.
And obviously, it was a bank holiday weekend. The weather wasn't great, but still, Donegal got a lot of people visiting from all parts of the island of Ireland. And, you know, it's great to see the crowds. It's great to see them bring the money in. It's great to see the investment in the local economy. But it's interesting the contrast you make, because on the one hand, you've got local people who will put on the yellow Tidy Towns vests and they'll go out with their pickers and they'll pick up litter. There are others who will sit in their cars, eat their fast food, and rather than walk 15 feet to the bin, they'll just wind down the window and chuck it out. And I mean, and the difference between those two people is immense.
Yes. It's just difficult to understand. And I know we have the same problem in Moville. And particularly on the green, on the top path, I have seen rubbish lying there as well. People who get a takeaway or whatever they do, their drinks or their snacks or their ice cream, and they just discard the container that it was in, just wherever they happened to be sitting. There are some people are very conscious, and I can see that myself, you know, and especially dog walkers and that. I have noticed that they are very respectful of the area, but in general, well, not say in general, there are always people who will disregard the. I don't know what kind of people they are, just to be just throwing everything around them.
And the sad thing is, I mean, unless anyone think we're saying, oh, Greencastle is very littered or Moville is very littered, if you go to any place in north, east, west, south Donegal, southwest Donegal, northeast Donegal, go anywhere in the county, and sadly, it will be the same story.
Yeah, it's a pity, you know, because a lot of the Tidy Towns people, they do a lot of work, you know, keeping the places, you know, tidy. And it's just a pity that others just don't have that same respect. I mean, I have seen people in Greencastle out with their pickers picking up rubbish, you know, and I thought, you really shouldn't have to be doing that.
Yeah.
The festival will be coming up now in Greencastle shortly, as far as I can understand. And I would just ask people who are visiting, and indeed locals as well, to have a bit of respect for the area that they're in and have a bit of regard for the Tidy Towns people and the people who go and pick up after them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Anna, thanks indeed for your call. The point is well made. And look, it's just a matter of saying to people, you know, please, if you're having a takeaway, just stroll over to the bin, put it into the bin. And, you know, it doesn't take an awful lot of effort. Anna, thank you indeed for speaking to us.
You're more than welcome.
And listen, keep on enjoying those wonderful...
Continue the good work that you...
Yeah, and look, you keep on enjoying your walks in Greencastle and Moville, a wonderful part of the country, and a part I love visiting myself. Now we're going to go to line two, and we're going to Councillor Michael McClaverty, who is the Cathaoirleach of Dlentys Municipal District. Now, Michael, very good morning to you.
Morning, Dawn. Morning, listeners.
One of the issues, Michael, and we have discussed this before, is the provision of recycling facilities in the Clonmacnoise area, and there has been question marks over the lack of facilities and the need for more. And you met someone at the weekend who had a bag of stuff to recycle and was looking for the recycling facility in which to put the stuff, the very socially responsible thing to do, but couldn't find anything.
Couldn't find anything, Donald, to be fair. He obviously walked around the town first of all, so he couldn't see it wasn't, there was nowhere to be seen. He landed with me then. He says, where do we put our recycling / rubbish? Well, I says, if it's just rubbish, it's into the bin. I says, but I says, there is no such recycling place for cardboard and waste paper that you're asking about. And he says, what are you supposed to do, chuck it out the window then? I says, no, I says, of course you don't chuck it out the window. Sir, I says, but as look, I says, unfortunately, we don't have here what you're looking for, as much and all as we are trying to get one, and a couple of the towns along here, but we don't have what you have. But look, as I tell you what, give me the bag, he says, and I'll deal with it. I says, thanks very much, no, for doing that. But I says, this is the wrong approach. I says, I know you're probably only seeing it in passing, but it's the wrong approach to even think of chucking it out the window. Because the unfortunate thing is here, Donald Down, right along the N56 here now, and including our back roads as well, there's a lot of rubbish getting thrown out from takeaways to plastic bags to Coke tins to bottles to everything, basically everything that you can walk out of your grocery shop with. You can drive really anywhere along the N56 here now and it's thrown out. And to be fair, matters would be a lot worse, to be fair now, and I genuinely mean this from the heart and commend both our Tidy Towns committees and both Clonmacnoise and Dunfanaghy and Aunt Grisla's, or sorry, three Aunt Grisla as well.
Absolutely.
And a good go to Harkins as well. That they do throw in work, like same as the people down Moville and all this. But look, there's no need for this. There's no need at all for it. As a councillor, I'd be up and down, as the same as my five colleagues are. We're up and down, crisscrossing every back road in the place at different days and different issues. And you're going places and you see takeaways, entire takeaways through along the road. And you're going up the road where you're going to, it's heading to houses. And you're thinking, like, you know, there's no need for this. Take the rapid home with you wherever you're going and put it into your own bin at home.
And the really sad thing is, and I have seen this driving late at night, I have seen a car in front of me. I'm driving along, there's a car in front of me, and suddenly two fast food wrappers and a burger box and whatever just go flying out the window. And we know what happens is people buy their food in a town or village or wherever. They drive along eating the food, and then when they're finished, they just wind down the window and chuck it out. And it's somebody else's job to pick it up. And isn't that what the council is there for? And the one thing that does need to be said, and the one thing that does need to be said, Michael, and this needs absolutely to be said, is lack of facilities. And you know, you said it yourself, and let's reinforce it. Lack of facilities is not an excuse to chuck it out the window or just to chuck it on the side of the road. That's not a reason to do so.
Not at all. No way. It's not at all. But I was totally taken back in shock by the gentleman's attitude. Now, the gentleman was more than nice and everything else, and I said he said it in passing comment, but he said it at the same time with a joke with a sting. I would say he realised himself fine well before I was going to take the bag off before he said anything.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. But I took the bag off him to do the responsible thing, and I disposed of it then for him. But the whole point is here, the wider point is here on the general public and our investors and all alike, as much as we welcome them all here, just be responsible when you're here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not hard to be responsible, because we go to other towns ourselves or villages or other countries, indeed either these days, we fully respect the laws there. And they should respect the laws mm-hmm. here as well as their own residents as well.
Yeah.
We can't know, it works two ways. Regardless who's driving the road, and mm-hmm. there are plenty of motor cars and vehicles now at the minute. It's down to the mall. But I accept the fact as well, we are falling down here as well in the Glenties area too, to be fair at all, that we don't have our own waste recycling facility as well for your cardboard and plastic and so on. That is a drawback as well, I accept that. But it's still no excuse either. It's still no excuse putting down the screw and then the wonder throwing it out either.
But the really sad thing is, as you know, as we heard from Anna, one of the really sad things is there are people who will chuck stuff out windows and they'll do so within 10 feet of a bin. So it isn't as though all of this is because there are no bins there. Sadly, there are some people, you could line up 10 lovely, bright, empty bins 15 feet away and they'll still chuck it because they couldn't be bothered opening a door and walking that 12 feet.
That's the sad reality of it. I happened to be in a town one day myself. I was actually in a forecourt one day, in a petrol court, going out of a shop, and outside there was this car, but down the window, fired his two bottles and a couple of sweet wrappers and drove off, like, on the forecourt, under view of cameras and mm-hmm. everything else. I can't understand that mentality, to be honest with you. I cannot understand it, though.
Absolutely.
When people are thinking that way.
And we're also in the period, we're in the summer period now. Perhaps it's done, but it's always, as I recall, if I recall correctly, it's during sort of July and August that Tidy Towns judges are visiting areas, and you know, you want the place to look its best, and you want the place to look its best all the time. It's not just a matter of putting on a good show for the tourists in July and August. You want your town to look the best at 365 days a year, because you know it's where we live, it's our home. I mean, you know, and we want our home to look as best it can. But you know, you'd hate to think that, you know, the judging for tidy towns is going to be compromised because some idiot can't, you know, either put something into a bag or put it in a bin or bring it home with them and dispose of it there. A caller's just been in touch to say there's two big bags of rubbish dumped in the middle of the road at Upper Derry Reel, not so far away from yourself. And sadly, that's something we see all too often.
It is.
And even another worrying one, another caller saying, I was in a town in Donegal on Bank Holiday Monday. It was a disgrace. The street was covered in smashed glass. I had my grandchildren with me. I was terrified if they would fall because the place was filled with empty bottles and litters as well. I mean, you know, it was bordering on dangerous, the caller says. And, you know, when you do have crowds, there can always be an accident. Something can always fall, something can always break. But, you know, people, especially when it comes to glass posing a danger in public places like that. I mean, you know, if glass falls and breaks, okay, it's an accident, that's grand. But that should be cleared immediately. And, you know, to leave glass lying around in a public place is unconscionable.
Well, it definitely is, but I think in fairness, on the glass end of it, in general, all throughout all areas, not just our own county, as we're talking about today, our own towns, either villages, the glass situation is something that would need to be addressed. I know some businesses, and I suppose most businesses, do try their best, but I do think in the situation of letting bottles and glasses make their way out to the street is something that needs to be, there needs to be more regulation on, that it needs to be pushed more just for plastic containers, except that type of stuff, disposable containers, that avoids the situation of a glass or a bottle getting smashed or otherwise. Or, you know, it is dangerous when you get glass out to the street in big crowds, and as you say, small children about, even small children, adults, one thing or another, and particularly here in the summertime as well. I notice particularly in Dunfanaghy here, where people go by the beach, some of them sort of take people in that in particular, swimmers alike, they tend not to wear shoes, and that's so much about the town that just you see them in Spain and that.
Yeah.
And that's where the dangers are there. Because I found myself different days where I would have noticed glass broken wherever, outside the shop or outside the square. Just go immediately with brush and shovel and sweep it up. Don't leave it for somebody else. If you see it, go and sort it.
Absolutely.
And most people are liking that if they see it, like.
Yeah. Michael, thanks indeed for the call. It's something we do always need to keep an eye on. And look, I suppose the appeal to people is, look, just please be socially responsible, because, I mean, this is it's either your home or it's a place you're visiting. And if it's not your own home, it's somebody else's home. So just please treat
somebody,
it with that bit of respect.
Somebody else's home, yes.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Michael, just give the respect that everybody deserves. Yeah. That's all anybody's asking for. Like, and just be sociable and be safe and just watch what you think twice before you do what you're going to do.
Councillor Michael McLaverty, the Coherlick of the Glenties Municipal District, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning. Now, we're going to move on. The main story of the morning, if you've been listening to Donna Marie on the news, is the data breach with the PSNI. Details of both police officers and civilian staff were mistakenly posted online for a period. It came, we understand, on the back of compliance with the Freedom of Information request. Now, SDLP MLA Mark H. Durkin is that party's policing spokesperson, and he joins us. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
Mark, you believe that it's incumbent now on the Chief Constable to make a statement on this as quickly as possible.
Well, the scale of this data breach is alarming, Donal, and its consequences could potentially be immense. So many fundamental questions arise for the Chief Constable and others. But first and of the greatest importance is the safety of officers, staff and their families. And there will understandably be huge concerns around the police service, around the police staff and around the wider community today. So I think the PSNI, the board and the government indeed must provide answers and reassurance as soon as possible. And that's the first and primary duty, I think, of our special board meeting, emergency board meeting that's been convened for tomorrow morning. But secondly, we have to establish how something so damaging could ever happen. I mean, there has to be accountability by the PSNI as to how this happened, how it could happen, what fail-safes were in place or weren't in place to avoid something like this happening, and what urgent actions are being taken to ensure that there could never be any repeat of something like this.
The PSNI's initial statement suggested that this was a matter of human error, and the people who were working on this were acting in good faith, but an error was made. And then when that error was noted and realised, this material was taken down immediately. But it seems this material was online for up to perhaps three and a half hours.
Yeah, well, everyone can make a mistake, or anyone can make one, and everyone does make mistakes. Human error is something that can't be eradicated, but that's why systems are in place, or should be in place, to catch human error and prevent something like this happening. So there's been system error as well as human error, and that's why we have to establish what the system is, how it has failed, and what can be done to make sure nothing like this ever happens again. In terms of the information that was out there, this is the names, the ranks, and where police staff and police civilian staff are based. Many people have gone to great lengths to actually keep that information confidential. There still is a huge risk attached to being a police officer, unfortunately. We've seen how it's actually impacted upon recruitment here, which is something that's extremely worrying, and something like this won't do much to instill greater faith in the PSNI either.
Do we know how extensively this was accessed? We understand that a relative of a serving police officer made contact with a newspaper, the Belfast Telegraph, if I'm correct, and that's how this sort of came into the public domain, as it were. But do we know how many people accessed this information when it was online, and what the potential spread of the information in the public domain was?
Well, I've outlined what the information was. It was names of officers, yep, their ranks, and where they are based. You've alluded to the fact that it was out there for a few hours, but as of yet, I've no clarity, or board members haven't received any information as to how many people or who was able to access it over that time. I mean, it was in the public domain, on the public website, so God knows how many people could have seen it, and God knows who could have seen it if this information fell into the wrong hands. It could be extremely dangerous for individual police officers and for the North as a whole.
Presumably that's the sort of information you and your colleagues on the board will be seeking from senior PSNI officers when you have that meeting tomorrow.
Absolutely, and while the police are saying that this was down to human error, we will be drilling down further into that. Like, how many sets of eyes did this have to go past? And, you know, clearly there has been an error in the system here. Hopefully it's not as costly or as catastrophic as it potentially could have been.
Mark H. Durkin, SDLP MLA and party policing spokesperson, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Okay, Donal, thank you.
Mark, thank you very much indeed. That's Mark Durkin there speaking to us on that data breach, and those investigations are continuing. And as you heard there, that meeting of the policing board taking place tomorrow, and Mr. Durkin and others will be seeking information. Now, we are going to be speaking to Pat McCart, a former editor of the Derry Journal and a columnist with the Irish Daily Mirror as well, in just a moment. Going to take a short break. Back in a bit, we'll be speaking to Pat McCart about both the data breach as well. And also, we'll be speaking about the count at Derry City Council. We thought it was finished in May. Perhaps not. And welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Now, we're going to go to Zoom, where we are joined by Pat McCart. He's a columnist with the Irish Daily Mirror and, of course, a former editor of the Derry Journal. Pat, good morning.
Morning, Donald. How are you?
Very well indeed. Pat, we're going to go to the main topic of our conversation in just a moment. But obviously, as a news junkie with a particular interest in things happening in this part of the world, you'll have been watching with interest that data breach, the PSNI breach, that details of which emerged this morning.
Donald, that's a really serious one, because apparently it was up for several hours. I don't know how true that is. It's still sort of an evolving story. But, you know, it's Northern Ireland, and I would presume this morning, if you're a serving police officer and your name, address, function, and various other bits of information, your data has been up on a website for several hours, I would think you'd be very, very nervous. And the other thing about it, Donald, is a lot of people who are serving police officers, you know, don't put on the uniform when they're leaving for work in the morning and take it off before they get home. And their neighbours think they're going off to be a civil servant or something and don't realise it. So a lot of people could now suddenly say, oh, jeepers, the guy living next door to me is a cop sort of thing. And that's got big implications for everybody.
I don't believe the information included home addresses. I think the only personal information was surname and first initial. So it would have just said, as I understand it, it would have been Kavanagh D. Constable.
Yeah,
Marifeld Station.
A wee bit there, Donald. It seems a wee bit confused. I think you could be right, but the earlier claims were suggesting it was much. No, I'm not certain about this. Yeah. It's just what I've read on various places. At the Nolan Show and your rival on BBC, are leading with it this morning. But there was a suggestion that there was other for a certain time. Now, Donald, this is totally up for. As I said earlier, it's evolving.
I know there was some suggestion that there may have been, there was a spreadsheet and there may have been a second tab on the spreadsheet. Now, whether or not that was accessible,
maybe questionable. You can deduce the information from what the information or the addresses from with the information that was up.
Yeah. Right. Pat, the main thing we want to talk about this morning, obviously, is the discussion on the recount that's taking place in Derry. We know the Alliance Party were hoping to make gains and didn't make gains elsewhere, but they actually lost out in Derry. And it transpired that while Philip McKinney lost his seat by 48 votes, there was something in the region of 150 transfers that were actually left to one side and weren't included in that count. This is potentially going to change the face of Derry City Council to an extent.
Yeah, by the way, there's a guy called John Cartwright. I don't know if you've ever heard the term cephologist. He's one of these guys who he's an English guy who apparently goes through election results, whatever rocks your boat. But anyway, he apparently after the election he was looking through the results and he figured out, wait a minute, there's this guy's lost a seat by 49 votes, but there was 150 odd votes to be counted. So what went on there? He got in touch with the councillors concerned in the Waterside area of Derry. And he also, as far as I know, got in touch with Naomi Long, the leader of the Alliance Party. And they got in touch with both the council and the Northern Ireland Electoral Office, and both of which confirmed there had been a mistake. And then they decided they would go for a high court challenge to the results. So it's a fine line. They said it's not a recount, it's a continuation of the count. Now, what the difference is, I don't know. But anyway, I'll leave you to work that one out.
Does continuation of the count then mean that what they're effectively going to do is they're going to take the figures they had at the time that Martin Riley was deemed elected and Philip McKinney was deemed eliminated, and they're effectively going to take this 150 votes that weren't, and they're just going to count them and add them?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And by the way, they will not declare any result this evening. They will make it known to the court, and the court will decide who has won the election. So Martin Riley could have a very nervous few days because it depends on what way the votes go. But anyway, the big thing for the Alliance Party, as you pointed out earlier, Donald, the Alliance Party has been seen for many, many years as sort of soft unionists, and it's basically a Belfast-based area, east of the ban type party. And it was very important in the last elections that they retained their seats. Derry is the cradle of the civil rights. It's a very known as a national city. It's always been the SDLP and Sinn Féin in Derry. And for Alliance at the last election, Rachel Ferguson, I was actually there. Apparently Rachel Ferguson, she got elected for Alliance. Apparently she went along to, and this was in, 2018? She went along to a meeting of the Alliance Party to discuss the election strategy, and she ended up the candidate. That's how desperate they were for someone. And this guy, Philip McKinney, he was very popular and all the rest. So I think he's lost by 49 votes and there was 150. So now what the Alliance Party want, symbolically, it was very important for them to be seen, to have candidates right across the north. And at the last election there in May, they got new seats in Ballyclare, Fermanagh and Limavady, which they seen as a breakthrough. And to lose two in Derry was sort of, what would you say? It was not good for their sort of image. They want to be seen as all over the north. They want to be seen as not just a Belfast-centric party. So that's why, symbolically, and they want to be seen. If they can get this seat back for Philip McKinney, it would be considered quite a coup for them.
Do we know whose votes they are? Do we know where those 150 votes have come from? Because, obviously, it will be important, potentially, you know, in maybe discerning, if they had come from an SDLP candidate, for instance, would that benefit Martin Riley? If they'd come from a unionist candidate, theoretically, could that benefit Philip McKinney? Do we know where the votes are from?
I think, as far as I remember, they came from a DUP candidate who had been elected.
Yeah.
So they could go anywhere, you know. Now, Martin Riley is a very sort of middle-of-the-road, well-respected SDLP man, so I wouldn't rule it out any which way, what way they'd go. Yeah. But as far as I remember, it was on the election of a DUP candidate that the 150 votes came about.
Yeah, if I recall, he was mayor just 3-4 years ago, if I recall, Martin Riley, wasn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. He's a very decent and anybody would meet him, very personable guy. So he's quite capable of picking up votes any which way. But anyway, the count has been reordered by the court, Donald, and it starts at 10 o'clock. Well, it started, I think, at 10 o'clock this morning in the Foyle Arena. But it'll probably finish today, seeing it's only, 150.
Well, if it is 150, presumably every one of those is going to be scrutinised to within an inch of its life. You know, and there'll be
absolutely.
Our personation officers, well, not personation officers, but our party officials allowed in to view, I presume they have to be, allowed in to view the process.
It has to be, It's all part of the democratic process, Donald. They'll be, you're 100% right. It's an unusual one, Donald, in the sense that very rarely do you come across someone like this. Like, I've been at elections in North and South for years, and I've never come across anything like this. Now, I have to say, in places like Donegal and, various other places in the Republic, they're so used to PR elections that they rarely make mistakes. But I have seen a couple of challenges at elections in the North. PR, you know, it's first past the post in the North since 1921. And they don't really, it's only in recent times that the PR elections have been introduced. They do seem to make an odd error.
The other thing, I suppose, in the Republic as well, and people talk about legendary machines like the Blaney machine. I mean, you know, not a hair is going to be out of place if the Blaney machine and the old Bernard Lynchy machine with Fianna Fáil, when those heavy hitters, and they're still about when they're on the count floor, they understand that process probably better than the council organisers themselves, and they will make absolutely damn sure nothing is out of place.
As a young reporter, I went to an election, I think, about 1974. I remember sitting there and I hadn't a notion, not a clue what was going on. And I remember this Blaney guy told me exactly how many votes everybody had got. And see, by the end of when the official count, I think he was about 2 out or something like that. You know, it was ridiculous. He had got it spot on. Those people could hear the grass grow when it came to elections.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, so, you know, it'll be, we presume there will be some form of an interim resolution, shall we call it, today. But as you say, that goes before the court. That will not, I presume, be made public in any way, shape or form, so we won't have any idea. Unless, of course, the party people themselves start to leak it, which may well happen, but certainly no official declaration is going to be made.
Exactly. But you see the thing, Donald, the last time, the last election, Sinn Féin, they got one in every 3 votes. They went up from, 105 seats to 144. They were 22 ahead of the DUP. The Alliance Party, I think, they were up from 52 to 67. You know, so the Alliance Party, all this is, you know, they want to be seen to be moving forward all the time. That's why it's so important to them. The Alliance Party, a couple of years back, Donald, couldn't get elected, you know, in their own house. Now they're very much at the third leg of the stool, and they want to be seen. And it's important for them to be seen to be moving forward all the time. And the last European elections too, Donald, as you remember, Naomi Long was very, very successful. It used to be just, it was a binary choice. You voted Protestant and Unionist or Catholic and Nationalist. The Alliance Party now see themselves as a third option, and they are growing, and that's why this is important to them.
Even thinking in terms of, say, the lifetime that I've been working here in this job and I've been covering politics, I mean, the difference between sort of John Alderdice would have been the Alliance leader when I started, and the difference even in attitude and in the way they act in Stormont between Alderdice and Naomi Long is huge. I mean, she's a very effective opposition person who will, you know, if she's opposing something, she'll oppose it with vigour. And she certainly doesn't sort of sit in any party line or any religious line. And, you know, there's a big difference. And she's been bringing in those votes, and she's maybe, you know, the future of Alliance.
Absolutely. Donald, what's happened is the Alliance Party have tapped into that sort of, you know, I grew up in an era, as you well know, when I was in Derry, you know, the first conversation you had with somebody was to work out, are they a Catholic or a Protestant? Mm-hmm. Nowadays, there are so many young people. The Republic has changed beyond measure, as we've seen with the recent passing of Sinead O'Connor. and the north has changed dramatically. Yeah, if you go to Belfast now, when I went to Belfast years ago, I remember everything was shut after about 5 o'clock in the evening. Mm-hmm. Belfast is buzzing. There's a lot of young people. They meet socially. They don't care whether they're Catholic, Protestant, and Hindu. They brought in, if you look at around Letterkenny and you look at around Derry, there are Polish people, there are Ukrainians, there are people of colour. Our society is changing big time. And, you know, the old sectarian headcount, that's disappearing. And so much is changing that I'm not sure the political parties have got a total handle on what's happening. And I know the DUP, I think, are sort of a wee bit hidebound, and there you find this change very, very difficult. And Alliance are riding this particular horse and riding it very, very well.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. Do we have any indication from the courts? And I suppose really you can't get an indication from the courts, but we don't know when some form of official declaration can be expected.
Apparently, Donald, if I'm reading it right, it's the courts going to make the determination, not the politicians.
And the courts will do so in its own good time.
If it's decided that this guy has got the votes, he will be deemed elected, and I would presume Martin Reilly will lose the seat.
We will watch with interest. Pat McCarthy, thanks indeed for speaking to us.
All the best,
morning.
Donald.
You too, Pat. Take care. That's Pat McCarthy there, as we said, a journalist with the columnist with the Irish Daily Mirror and a former editor of the Derry Journal. Let's just take a look at a few of your comments before we go to a break. Caller says the toilet facilities in Bundoran are absolutely appalling. It's a very busy area with a lot of tourists. If the council can charge for the use of the car park, the least they could do is put in flushable, functioning toilet facilities for people. I drove to Mayo over the weekend and back, didn't see a single Garda checkpoint, so much for a road safety message over the weekend. Caller says the hypocrisy in this country is unreal. All the praise and accolades being poured on Sinéad O'Connor now that she's left this mortal coil, while she was ridiculed and vilified in her lifetime. Perhaps if people had been as kind and generous to her while she was alive, she would still be here today. Another caller says the next time Ishka Aaron talks about hosepipe bans or water conservation, ask them why the burst main, which is causing a river of water to run through Ashlawn in Letterkenny, hasn't been dealt with since it was reported to them at 3 o'clock yesterday. And another caller says people who throw litter in the countryside are cowards because they normally throw it where there are no houses. That's a comment from a caller. It's at 9:49, time for a short break. Back after these. Now there are fresh calls to postpone raising toll charges. Tolls are due to go up again on Irish roads at the start of next year after a hike last month. And if that wasn't bad enough, road charges from Northern Ireland to the Republic of €10 per visit are also adding to the costs faced by hauliers. Joined by Eugene Drennan, who is president of the Irish Road Haulage Association. Eugene, good morning.
Good morning to you, Donald.
Now, we've been speaking, obviously, to our own local hauliers, and they've been giving us their perspective. And as you can imagine, in Donegal, some hauliers crossing the border multiple times a day. So that 10, and it's not 10, it's 10 sterling, if I'm correct, actually.
£10.
It's £10 sterling, yeah, sorry. Apologies for that. And, you know, that it's really biting in, particularly in Donegal. So, I mean, you know, if that wasn't bad enough, the toll is going up again on the motorways.
Yes, indeed, and they've just gone up recently. And the excuse or the reasoning for the last increase was because of inflation. But inflation has come down now, so do we get that increase back? These toll roads and their concept originally, you know, to try and get infrastructure into Ireland, but they really got a very good contract. And they are now owned by multinational banks. They're doing quite well, and that have a contract with a guarantee from the state that should they lose money on the toll road, the state will pick up the loss or to a degree the guaranteed price. So they've had a very, very good run with us. And two increases in a short period of time, unnecessary, and not at a time of very high cost. With all the upset we've come through with Brexit, with the COVID, now with Brexit, with trying to keep a competitive edge. Donegal is a border county to a degree, and the survival rate and trying to keep a competitive edge and keep a business going is very difficult. And though you may see many limited companies or big names up on trucks and on the sides of trucks, and haulage companies who have worked very hard, it's a family that's behind them. They're family businesses. Great names of Donegal from the Glinties like Boyle or from Inishowen like Doherty. They are people who've worked very hard to keep this going. And we need to keep our competitive edge and keep alive, especially along border counties.
One interesting thing I found last year, my wife and I were in Norway and we did one or two tours that involved going through long roads which had been tunnelled through mountains over the past 20 to 30 years. And in both cases, in particular, one around Alesund and the other around Molde, we were speaking to the drivers. And the drivers told us that those roads used to be tolled, but the deal was made between the company that built the road and the Norwegian government that they would put a toll up and the company would administer it and they would keep going until the road was paid for and a certain amount of profit had been made and then the tolls would stop. And those figures were agreed. And in both cases, the toll had finished 2 to 3 years ahead of schedule because it had made the money and paid for the road. It seems to me when you look at things like the M50 and the M1 and other roads around this country, they've been paid for 4, 5, 6 and 7 times over.
Yes, that is very relevant, Donald, because the logic you've just spoken about, if you come to anybody with a reasonable fair play and reasonable logic to your argument, they'll buy into it or they'll try and, you know, work with you until such time as the toll road and they have the infrastructure is paid for. But just what you said, the Eastlink Bridge and the M50 paid for a long, long time and we're still paying for it. The other aspect of that, of course, Norway, in fairness to Ireland, Norway's a very wealthy company from Ireland, perhaps they can do a little bit better that way. But the concept is correct in what you're saying and that when paid for it should be free. The other aspect of it is we in the haulage sector are part of the supply chain. And when we're told, and when we're taxed in our earnings, when we're taxed very heavily through what we put into the tank in the fuel, the excise and the level of taxation in fuel, since the downturn of 2008 has increased considerably here, and we pay massive taxation through our fuel costs, and then we're charged yet again for using the road to get the goods to the people. That's about triple taxation on the citizens, and it's about double on us. So the balance, and even though all of this has come up now because of the there's a subcommittee reporting to the Minister on taxation and the Welfare Commission on how we do our charging and how we charge for industry, for energy. So, and within that, they speak about, and the recommendations of the Minister for Transport is a just transition and a phased basis. So we would need both, and we would need to see both. And for those in the supply chain and in this very competitive sector that is really, really still challenged by Brexit and by the cost of Brexit and trying to do trade either in out of Northern Ireland or in out of the UK, there's only so much we can take and we are paying at the top rate for a long time.
Have you any confidence that the budget will see these toll increases deferred? The campaign is on, obviously, you and a lot of other organisations making pre-budget submissions at the moment. Are you hopeful you will be successful in getting this at least deferred?
I don't know about hopeful and the deferred. I think we are hopeful and the deferment because Minister Jack Chambers has sort of come out and said that. And we saw something about rail freight from the Taoiseach the other day, which said, hang on, enough is enough. We do this by phased basis. We are preparing a very big pre-budget submission. And other issues have to be addressed. Yeah. The cost of the access to fuel, the bio and the HVO, which were part of the adults, are all increased commodity on the world market, which are double and nearly three times the cost of diesel.
Yep.
So on top of that, we can't be paying a NOR surcharge or a storage charge. We cannot be paying carbon tax on the non-fossil fuel or the non-mineral part of the fuel. We have to look at the balance in the overall.
Eugene Drennan of the Irish Road Hauliers Association, president of that organisation. Indeed, thank you very much for speaking to us this morning. It's a minute and a half to 10 o'clock. Donna Marie coming up with the news and obituary notices. And we will see you for the second hour after that.